Welcome, everyone, back to the Why I Don't Like podcast. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, here to entertain you as I sit down and record episodes on a media that I consume, and yet I don't like. We're going to be continuing on in our Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation series, focusing on Season 1, Part 1, Episodes 5 through 6. Just a gentle reminder, this show does not receive edits, so if that's something that offends you, I understand. Be at peace. Go on your way. So for everyone who's staying, thank you. So very glad to have you back for all this. Really loving the interactions you've been having with the show. I've gotten a lot of good feedback, a lot of stuff that I need to work on and improve. So yeah, I'm looking forward to more. Thank you guys for all that you do. So as I always do, I'm going to start the show with something that I do like. And what do I like? I like Monty Python and the Holy Grail. This is one of those movies. You can stereotype me into being one of the people, of course you like it, Christian. Well, I'm fine with being stereotyped there. It's really fun. It's zany. It's Monty Python at their best. Like, you really just can't go wrong with it. So with that in mind, we're just going to head into the actual show proper. And by going into episode 5, A Young Lady and Violence, which is a pretty good name. I will give it that. So we start off with Rudeus asking Ghislaine what they're doing. So Ghislaine gives him a letter saying she can't read. It's from Paul, who calls Ghislaine a woman with muscles for brains, which angers her. Paul then uses his connections. The letter explains that Paul used his connections to have Rudeus tutor a 9-year-old girl in Roa. And it is from this that he also learns that Ghislaine is the family's bodyguard and sword instructor, who wants to be taught by Rudeus too. She's what is known as a sword king, and she's someone that Paul has never beaten except in bed. Imagine that. Stay classy, Paul. Rudeus will stay there for 5 years until he turns 12 years old, and Paul forbids him from returning or making contact with his family until then, and Sylphie as well, as he's figured out that Rudeus and Sylphie have a bit of a codependency with one another. Now, Paul's P.S. in a letter states that the noble girl is fair game, but not Ghislaine, which makes her tell Rudeus to tell that to Zenith. Isn't that just funny? Just so great. That's our opening scene. So after our last episode, with Rudeus getting knocked out by Paul, forced into this situation where he's going to have to just work at this place, which, hey, he asked for a job. This is something he's capable of doing. He's learned magic on his own for the most part. And with Roxy's help, he's increased that magic. So naturally, he's going to be good at doing it with other stuff, too. He's a gifted student, because some of it he already knows how to do from his past life. But we'll forget about that for right now. And there we go. Now, of course, Paul continues to be his scummy, but also inspiring is the wrong word. His Paul self. We'll just put it that way. You take the good with the bad with Paul. And the whole thing with Ghislaine, it's like, haha, just look at me. I bested her once in bed. It's Paul. And yeah, there's nothing more to say. We're just going to move on from there. We're good. So this will take us to the next part of the episode, where Rudeus arrives in Roa proper and inside the mansion where he'll be working, seeing some beastkin maids at the house. He greets the man of the house, who corrects him on his etiquette, says that his name is Philip Boreas Greyrat, and he's the mayor of Roa, and he's Paul's cousin. Philip asks what Rudeus has been told, only to realize that Paul was deliberately vague about who Rudeus would be dealing with. Excellent. He then goes to introduce Rudeus to his daughter, joking that he hopes Rudeus doesn't seduce her. Oh my, that's so good we said that. His daughter doesn't like many people, and Philip only allowed this because Paul asked. So Philip goes and introduces Rudeus to his daughter, Eris, who he feels has immense intensity, is kind of his first impression of her. And he greets her, But she's unimpressed because he is just, you know, younger than her. And she's not going to take that. So it is at this point that, you know, he gets she gets angry with him when he talks back to her and smacks him, making his second impression of Eris as someone who's a very violent person. So he slaps her back, only for her to punch him in the face and then mercilessly pin him to the floor and just pound him into oblivion, which forces him to use wind magic to repel her, and he runs away. Angered that Paul had described her earlier as a little willful. Rudeus escapes and meets with Philip again, calling Eris a vicious creature, only to backpedal to keep the peace. Philip then asks if he's going to give up. Rudeus refuses, saying he can't have Paul laughing at him, making him Philip remark that all the previous teachers had quit at this point and ask Rudeus if he has a plan. Rudeus considers that he could beat her with magic, but decides against it as it will teach Eris the wrong lesson, and that strength might makes right. So he proposes a trick instead to make her want to study and tells Philip his plan, and Philip agrees to it. So we get here to Eris's introduction. And let me tell you, for a show that I don't like, I love Eris. She just checks off the boxes for me for a character who starts off with this very willful person who has a lot to learn, and she actually goes through a character arc, unlike other certain people I can mention. Not to say that they don't go through character arcs, but they don't go far enough. Eris certainly does. You can disagree or agree with her choices along the way, but I think for the most part, you can't say that she doesn't learn. She doesn't grow as a character, as a person. And her slugging Rudeus is like, oh, chef's kiss, it's everything I've ever wanted from this show. You know, if this happened more often, you know, I might even enjoy this show more. Because he needs this to happen. I'm not saying violence is the answer, but, I mean, it's good to see what happens to him in this case. Him getting exactly what he deserves in this circumstance. So this brings us into, what type of character is Eris? Well, if you know, you know your anime and the like, you're going to hear the term tsundere. This is a very special term. The dere part comes, it kind of means like a lovey-dovey kind of person. There's different deres in Japanese etymology. The tsundere is going to be your more willful, standoffish kind of person who can't really admit their feelings out loud in the same way. They're very prideful and just not able to express themselves as well. This is one of my favorite character archetypes in anime. I know there's some issues with it when it comes to how some characters are portrayed, but they just click with me. I mean, I think it goes all the way back to the first one that I can ever remember encountering, that being Asuka of Neon Genesis Evangelion. And then later on, Rin Tosaka from Fate. Like, it's just a characterization. It just really jives with me. And Eris is a great example of it because she starts off as a brat, an absolute utter brat who you kind of wish would just get put in her place. And then she grows from that without losing parts of this tsundere characterization, but also changing it in certain aspects to become more tolerable. But a part of why she has ended up his way is a part of Philip's parenting. And we'll see this in this episode and the next, is how, well, Eris is a victim of her family circumstances. And it is, yeah, just one of those things. They go, wow, well, no wonder she ended up the way she did. If you just let her get away with this stuff, if you don't rein her in, if you don't discipline your child, and her grandfather is not exactly the moral paragon of how to act right either. Well, no wonder she is like she is. No wonder teachers and tutors keep running away from her. What else were you expecting? I want to keep that image of Rudeus being hit on the screen as much as possible. We have to move on. So that night, Rudeus goes to bed, reflecting on how he hates his memories of being beaten up, which was kind of triggered by Eris punching him in the face and beating him up, and wishes that he had the holy relic with him. as he prays to God Kami-sama for his success. Now, if only you actually believed in any of that and just weren't saying it like many people do just because it feels good. Rudeusden wakes up to find Eris and he have been kidnapped as he had planned, but they're being treated by their kidnappers more roughly than he wants. Rudeus mocks Eris for not being able to escape from their bonds like he can, as he does effortlessly with incantationless fire magic. So what does she do? She proceeds to just get up anyway, even with her hands tied, and bangs on a door, causing one of their captors to beat her viciously, which is far against the plan that Rudeus has. And the captor even beats Rudeus once too with a punt. So we see Eris bloodied on the ground, promising to have her revenge, and says that she'll tell her grandfather about this. Rudeus then heals Eris to a point without healing her fully so that she doesn't make a scene, telling her that she could do this herself and heal herself if she just simply studied. He then overhears their captors and realizes that they're not acting according to plan, and he uses earth magic to create an opening on one of the metal bars leading outside, mocking Eris by telling her to just use her fists to solve all our problems. And when she finally starts relenting a little bit, he makes her promise to stop shouting and punching as they escape together. This is a very effective scene in this episode, in that you start off, Rudeus has this plan. He tells Philip the plan. They've got the plan organized and everything. Didn't take that long to do it. And it's already gone wrong. And this is a good thing from a character point of view, because it puts Rudeus in a position where he has to be flexible, where he has to realize, oh, well, I planned for this to happen, but it didn't. So what do I do instead? This is perfect for that idea. And it causes him to improvise. It causes him to figure out how to handle the whole situation with Eris too, and get them both out of there safely. I really like that the author did this. Very solid at this point in time. So we'll move on from there to where we see Rudeus healing Eris fully, as she immediately then breaks her promise by shouting. So Rudeus leaves her behind. He's like, oh, you're not going to listen to me? Well, I'll just leave. But Eris comes back to him when she hears their pursuers coming in their direction. They find that they're in a town by near Roa, which Rudeus had figured out by reading a road sign, which makes Eris remark that she can't read. Eris tells him to tell her what it says, but he refuses, citing that, hey, you didn't like me, so I wasn't hired, which at this point is technically true. So they escape on a carriage, but when they get back into Roa proper, they're tricked by one of Eris' servants, who I forgot to mention earlier had been in that scene when Rudeus was making his plan. So he took advantage of that to make it go awry, because he doesn't like Eris, because, hey, Eris is a huge brat, and yeah, it's not easy to get along with someone like that. So while I can't say that I'm happy with his plan, I understand why he's angry. So as Rudeus is distracted, Eris gets snatched again, forcing Rudeus to fight to defend them. Now the captors then try to bribe him to help join them in selling, because they see his magical talents. Well, okay, we'll cut you in on the deal. Hey, just sell her to us. We'll give you 100 Asura gold pieces, which, if I did my math correctly, and you should always double check behind me, that would be 8 times what he would need to send himself and Sylphie to school. But he refuses, thinking back to his life as a loser shut-in who played RPGs and dating sims, where it's like, oh, well, this is your different choices you can make along the way. And then he says the line that money can't buy dare, as he then creates some fireworks that, oh boy, I forgot to get to those images. That's my bad on YouTube. He creates some fireworks that excite Eris as she sees them, goes, wow, that's what magic is capable of. And they also alert Ghislaine to their plight. He then fights the captors with earth magic, hitting the one holding Eris in the groin, making him drop her, as Rudeus catches her and tries to run away. The other kidnapper throws a sword at them while they're in midair and unable to get away, as Rudeus recognizes that from Paul's lessons, this whole style that just happened is part of the North God style, Ghislaine appears, intercepts the blade, and destroys it before it can kill them, and then she kills their kidnappers, minus the servant. Rudeus, meanwhile, suffers from being drenched in the blood and from seeing a dead body for the first time. Ghislaine brings them back with the treacherous servant, who Philip deals with. Eris says they return home so she can talk again. Meanwhile, Rudeus is wondering what would have happened to himself if he had died again, and walks away thinking he's failed, but Eris stops him, giving him special permission to use her name, and she accepts him as her teacher as that episode ends. Yeah. A lot to say here. Rudeus's idea of how to handle the situation. Good. Solid. His motivations for rejecting the deal, not so much. Let us remember, at this point in time, Rudeus is 7 years old, physically, and Eris, I can't remember if it's this episode or the next, is 9. A 2-year age gap for children. And his motivation is to make this tsundere still be a part of his life so she can eventually get all all lovey-dovey with him. Our main character, everyone. Why? Why is this a motivating factor? She's about to be sold for reasons he can't even know about. And any good person would go, okay, we can't let that happen. Let's do something about it. But instead, we get Rudeus. And what does Rudeus do? Well, my motivation is, well, she's a chick. And you know what we're going to do later? Yeah, that's why I'm saving her. Which would, if that were not there, this would be such a great, good judge of his character for stuff to go on later for his motivations. He is essentially being handed everything he could have wanted and more to bring him and Sylphie into school. But all it would cost is one girl's life. One girl who, by the way, has never treated him well. Anything. So for him to be self-sacrificial here would be tremendous. And actually showing us that he's capable of doing these good things. But instead we get what we get. And that's one major reason why I don't like this episode. There are other reasons for the next episode I don't like either. But we'll get there when we get there. Sorry, I'm a little tired. I tried to set up a new mic stand that was gifted to me, and I failed miserably. So I'm just back on the old mic and very angry right now. So this discussion is not helping my anger go away. But one thing I will say that was handled well here is Rudeus's reaction to seeing death, to seeing blood, to be drowned and drenched in that blood, which is far different from what Ghislaine does and Eris does. Eris, because she's a hoity-toity noble who doesn't really understand what's going on here too much like he would. And Ghislaine, because she's probably like the 7th bloodbath she's seen that week, disregarding all the times she's seen it beforehand. So to have him be in that shock, that's great. Because even in his old life, yeah, he may have seen it in video games or anime or something, but it was never real. He never saw it happen. That's great. And then we get over to, let me see, what else was I going to say? No, I think that was it for this part. So we're going to go from there into episode 6, A Day Off in Roa. So we see later on, Rudeus plays a game with Philip, who compliments him and tells him that Grey Rat blood has many uses, which is why both Eris and he were kidnapped. Officially, Ghislaine's the one who fought as part of their local political schemes and machinations for power and standing, and because the other Grey Rats in the area wouldn't take kindly to Rudeus's presence there. So basically, this whole thing has been used as a way to like showcase their part of the Grey Rat family, their power. Rudeus then meets Philip's wife, Hilda, who he immediately perves on by looking at her large breasts, and she reacts poorly to his presence, not because of that, which she would have been way more in the right for, but because of something else, which, when we do get there, I like, but for right now, you're kind of like, who is this chick? What's her problem? What's going on here? Yeah. And then Hilda kind of just leaves. So there's that. Then Rudeus meets the Lord of Fatoa, which is kind of the region they're in, Sauros Boreas Grey Rat, who acknowledges Rudeus's exploits and allows him to stay for him being polite and, you know, bowing properly and everything, and for his actions in saving Eris. Sauros then punches Philip for not treating Rudeus better as Eris' savior, but relents when he hears Philip hopes to treat Rudeus like family as thanks. Sauros tells Rudeus that he has a request for him to teach Eris magic, which he makes Eris ask for once Rudeus points out it'd be better for her that way so that she can actually do things on her own instead of relying on others. So Sauros then yells for Eris to come down and do it herself, which she does in a very cutesy way, as explained by one of the Beastkin servants and pretty much slaves, who explains to Rudeus that it's because the Grey Rats, like Beastkin, kind of have a fetish for them. And Eris holding her hair up like pigtails is meant to emulate drooping ears, as you can see right there if you're on YouTube. Yeah, cutesy scene. A lot of bad implications behind why she's doing it, but Eris is not responsible for the whole enslaving Beastkin, as we'll find later on in their line, but that's another matter for another day. This opening scene establishes enough. We know there's something weird going on with the Grey Rat blood, or is it meant literally? Is it more like a political thing? What's going on here? So they add some nice intrigue there. Super good. Always love that. To ask those questions and bring up, okay, yeah, they were both taken. Why did they both need to be taken? Why wasn't Rudeus just killed? Well, the Grey Rat name holds something important. That's good. Then we get to Sauros' introduction. I like him to an extent. As mentioned before, there's some implications of things that he does I'm not too keen on. But as far as his and his parenting skills aside, as far as his interactions in this scene, masterpiece. You can definitely see where Eris gets it from, because it's not her dad. It's most definitely the influence of her grandfather. And it's so fun to see two very hot-headed people act antagonistic towards each other in a loving manner to where one of them has to back down, and Eris does. So that's that. Next, we see Rudeus training Eris as she casts magic for the first time while he spends his time crafting a figure of Roxy. Rudeus then teaches Ghislaine some simple addition, as Eris almost sets the entire room on fire with magic, which makes Rudy douse it with water magic. However, him correcting her behavior in this way makes her run away, as she doesn't like being criticized. Rudeus has been teaching her for a month, we find out, and every time that he corrects her in any way or calls her out, she runs away. He then finds her asleep on a haystack, remarking that, you know, she kind of looks like an angel when she sleeps. Which he then ruins in typical Rudeus fashion by telling her, hey, if you don't wake up, you're going to get assaulted. Implication being me. Rudeus, big part of the dentist system. So he decides to do it himself when she doesn't wake up, commenting that one day her cup size will be way larger. Our main character, everyone. She's 9. He then decides to take her panties off, but she wakes up and punches him mercilessly. Unfortunately, not killing him in the process, as would have been far better for everyone involved. Yes, so much better. Later, he tries to recruit Ghislaine to inspire Eris to study. Ghislaine tells about her old party, the Fangs of the Black Wolf, which consisted of 6 party members, 2 swordsmen, a fighter, thief, mage, and cleric, who she says she let handle the supplies and money, and that Paul and Zenith were a part of the group 7 years ago, which they left when about the time she got pregnant with Rudeus. You can just figure in from the math there. She kept getting conned out of money because she couldn't do basic math. And there was one point in her life where she was going 10 days without food or water and suffered from eating the wrong things. So that's why she wants to learn math, which inspires Eris to study. All right. Let's get it out of the way. The molestation scene. There are people who will defend this scene to their dying breath. Thing, isn't it funny how he's doing this to her? I mean, she's a stuck-up noble. She deserves it. I have seen people literally write down before and get comments about this episode and their defense of this scene in particular. Let me just tell you, no, that's not how this works. 7 and 9. Rudis is 7, mentally 40-whatever at this point in time. Eris is 9. Neither should be thinking of this situation at that age. Eris shouldn't be worrying about being molested by anyone in the circumstance because she's 9 years old. Rudius shouldn't be telling her that because he's supposed to be 7. So if you want to act like a 7-year-old, you don't say things like this. You don't think things like this. I hate this so much. I hate this episode so very much, and that's going to reflect in our scores when we get later on. It's infuriating that stuff like this keeps happening. And he just escalates. He talks about her figure. Then he decides to just take her clothes off. What does he think is going to happen? What rational human being would ever do something like this? And is meant to be someone that we're supposed to get behind as a character, as a person, and go, yep, that's my guy. That's the one I want to see leading this series. It's maddening. It's frustrating. I hate every moment of it. So we'll move from that so I don't get too angry to Ghislaine. She acts really well in this part of the episode. I enjoy her, you know, giving some feedback on her old party and how that worked and how she used to be the kind of person who got led astray because she didn't understand how to do basic arithmetic. As like a motivating factor for Eris so that she could learn. That's great. Like a solid there. We get to learn a little bit about more where she comes from, how she knows Paul and Zenith. Perfect for setting her up, getting us be a little more, what's what I'm looking for, fond of her as a person, wanting to see more of her. That's well done. It's the rest I hate. So I'll move from there to the next part of the episode, where we see that Eris and Rudius are sparring with one another under Ghislaine's direction, where we see that Eris is far better due to her age and natural aggressiveness, and she beats Rudius mercilessly. Ghislaine tells Rudius that his swordsmanship suffers when he's up close and personal with someone because he closes his eyes and panics. So later on, Rudius thinks that he solved Eris's impatience to study, but quickly realizes that he failed miserably because she hasn't had time to rest and relax, so they go off into town to explore the shops. Rudius recounts how Roa is the largest city in the Fatoa region of the Ostara Kingdom. We get some good lore there. We'll get some more later on, too. While perusing the stores, Rudius speaks with the shopkeeper, who tries to sell him a powerful aphrodisiac, which he writes down as Eris and Ghislaine can't read, which they complain about him hiding from them. He tells them that he's simply just doing market research, which this would be fine if this was actually the only thing he was doing, because that's a smart thing to do. So he's doing the market research so he can compare prices at the different stalls, and says that he needs to be very careful how he spends his money, and finds out that Eris's math is still abysmal when she tries to do some to show off to him. But he praises her anyway to motivate her. Now, Eris tells Rudius that, you know, her grandfather will pay for anything that she wants. So all he has to do is ask Eris. But Rudius refuses to do so, so that he can help teach her the value of money. Good idea. Like that idea. And tells her that he only gets paid 2 silver pieces a month. And Ghislaine gets paid in gold. I want to say it's like 2 gold as well. I can't remember. I didn't write it down. He then says that they can ask Philip when they get back to give her an allowance. Smart plan. I like it. Good on Rudius. So while they're going back to the mansion, Rudy sees a flying island in the sky, which Ghislaine says is Perugius, the armored dragon king's flying fortress, and he's one of the three heroes who defeated the demon god Laplace, which Rudius recognizes from a bedtime story that his parents had read to him. Ghislaine states that it's the year 414 of the armored dragon calendar. And later, we see Eris's schooling has improved thanks to the break that they took, and she reveals that she bought the aphrodisiac for him, not knowing what it is or what it does, but knowing that he wanted it. That would be so sweet if this was any other character but Rudius. However, the aphrodisiac breaks when they try to interrogate him, and he blurts his purpose out loud, causing Eris and Ghislaine to tickle him in retaliation. Let's start with the aphrodisiac. And many times, in many different cultures, and even to today, these things exist. They're part of the world. I'm not opposed to them being part of the world. I'm opposed to a shopkeeper looking at a literal child who definitely wouldn't have the money for this anyways and saying, hey, man, you want some of this? You can last as long as you want. Do it multiple times over. Where? Why? Just why? What kind of scummy adult are you? Or you're thinking, yep, I'm going to make a buck off that kid by giving this 7-year-old who at most maybe looks 10. Entice him with that. That's what every kid wants. The only reason that exists is because the author put it in there. I hate it. It's miserable. It serves no purpose except be, haha, isn't it funny that Rudius is buying this? No, because he's 7. Mentally, above that. So, was he just going to keep it in reserve all these years? Is that a wise use of his money? Or is he planning to use it now? In which case, we have a lot of problems with that. Not even forgetting his physical age, but his mental age. It's stupid. I hate it. It's so miserable. It's one of the reasons why this episode fails, ultimately, in my eyes. Despite it should be a good thing of what's going on here. But we're left with that. But on a positive note, the world building we get here is very short and sweet, to the point, and I like it. So we get the idea there are three heroes who back in the day, they defeated the demon god, the demon king, Laplace. That's what Laplace's war was about, that Roxy was teaching him earlier. And hey, not only that, but there are these weird things called flying fortresses that exist in the sky. And they're just a normal everyday thing of this part of the world. So Rudius is learning that here. That is so good. I enjoy that a lot. As someone who loves world building, as someone who likes seeing what creators can do with their stories and say how this world is fleshed out in its history and why we are in the current way we are in the state of the world at the current time of the writing, like that's so great. It's ruined by being in a very terrible episode. All right, so it's time for scores. Episode 5, I'm giving a C+. There's not really too many things that wowed me here. If it was just judging on Eris alone, it'd probably be like an A something, probably an A-. But yeah, it's not as fun. For episode 6, I give it a D-. I can't imagine why, other than the fact that our main character, who is still physically 7 years old, mentally far older than that, doing the things that he does to an unconscious person who, by the way, is 9 years old and nowhere close to the ever being a thing between, an actual consenting couple. And there are people who defend and say, well, it's because he loves her. No. Even if he does, that's not how you treat your partner. That's not how you treat the person you love more than anything else in the world. It's miserable. I hate it. It has no place in here. I despise everything that stands for. So that's it. It's not shorter than the last couple episodes, but yeah, kind of blitz through the plot and all that. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Please, if you get a chance, leave a 5-star review on your podcasting platform of choice if you're listening to this on podcast somewhere. If you're listening to this on YouTube, please do me a favor. Like this video, comment below, and subscribe to the Systematic Geekology or the Anisdown Ministries podcasting pages. You can email me at whyidontlikepodcasts@gmail.com. That is without the apostrophe and without the ellipses. If you're interested in my own fiction writing, you can find my works at starvingwritersguild.com or on Amazon if you search the name MC Ashley. You can also find me podcasting on Systematic Ecology and Let Nothing Move You. Oh, and I did it once again. Use the outro. One day I'll remember. So, special thank you to Joshua Knoll for the music he provides, like this, for the podcast. And with all that in mind, I spent a lot of time today discussing what I don't like about Mushoku Tensei. But you know what I do like? You listeners. I like you. So see ya, Space Cowboy.